Welcome to the Round Table, Episode 29. A program of current affairs, games, politics, and the arts. For the week ending the 10th of February. And now, Wayne K. Spear, Andrew Ferber, and Gregory Sean Pinch.
Anne of Green Gables goes blonde, sparkling red hair scare, so that there's a new Amazon edition of Anne of Green Gables that's out now. And they've got here's some suitable music for it. She's a buxom blonde now, apparently, and no longer a pigtailed redhead.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
So people were leaving comments on the Amazon page. They've pulled it now. It's been so ill-received that people have driven it off the market. But here's a couple of reviews. Here's what people said. This book is supposed to be Anne of Green Gables, not Anne Does Green Gables. So they got this woman now. You got to see the picture, but she's a blonde, buxom farm girl with come hither eyes, according to The Guardian at UK. And this is a story about a 10-year-old girl who's adopted into a farm family and tries to adapt to that life. But here's the new edition. Here's a description from a reader. Elena M. wrote, "For those of you who have not read this series, I'll give you a summary. Anne is a young red-headed orphan sent to live on a farm on Prince Edward Island. Unfortunately, the adoptive family wanted a boy, but she does her best to fit in and warm their hearts. However, after coping with her feelings of abandonment and insecurity, getting her best friend drunk, getting teased by a boy in school, and losing the only real father figure she's ever known, she dyes her hair blonde, dons a plaid shirt, and becomes the town whore of Avonlea." Yeah. Yeah, what do you do, right? They're trying to reinterpret a classic for our times, and in this case, I guess, didn't work too well.
I don't know, you almost get the feeling that someone, like, you could see how it would happen. You could see how you could have people working in the sales and marketing and the art department who've never read the book, right? Mm-hmm. And there would just be that key fact about red hair being missed, right? They're like, it's a coming of age story. This is the demographic, right? This is the demographic. And they just go, it's like young adult lit. Okay. Yeah. This is,
you gotta spice it up though.
Bring up stock image number 68.
Can you make her look more like the woman in Twilight?
Yeah, that's it.
Patrick Brazeau, embattled senator, says Canadian Press, has been charged with assault, sexual assault, after an incident at his Gatineau home this week. He was in court Friday. I'll play a short clip of that, and then we're going to talk about this a bit, because I think there's a lot to say about this. I'm going to play two clips. This was Patrick Brazeau last year. Here he is on Ezra Levant's show, and he was talking about his upcoming boxing match with Justin Trudeau, and he said something prescient, and let's see if you can catch it here.
What are the stakes here? I mean, I think you got the advantage. What would happen, God forbid, if you lost? What do you think will happen if he loses? There's going to be political ramifications here, don't you think?
Well, obviously there will be, but I think, you know, as the old saying goes, if you give enough rope, people will eventually hang themselves.
if you give them enough rope. Well, he's had enough rope, and here he is in Gatineau on Friday at his courtroom here appearance, and some journalists here commenting on that.
Not to communicate and with the victim, not to be around of her address or her place of the employment.
Can you explain the seriousness of the charges? Are they serious charges?
Well, it's serious charges because it's an assault against a person, and it's sexual assault also, so it's a serious charge.
Okay, c'est fini.
That's it.
sounds from the courtroom appearance of Patrick Brizeau at his Gatineau hearing. It is a serious matter. Some people I note are enjoying this, but the charges of assault and sexual assault, nothing funny about that. I'm not really very charmed or amused by him. I think any amusement value he had ended a long time ago for me. When he was appointed in 2008, was it 2008? I think it was. He was already somebody with whom I was well familiar, and it was both known and knowable that he was a poor choice. What are your thoughts on this, guys? Andy?
Well, I mean, there's so many things to say about this guy. I note he was news in 2009. Employee there had filed a sexual harassment complaint against him in CAP. There was a lot of talk about this guy, and for Harper to bring this guy on, thinking it's a good idea is.
Tim Harper wrote a good article for the Toronto Star, and he said either Stephen Harper didn't do his work or didn't care what they found, but I think there hasn't been enough said about the fact that he was appointed. It was a bad appointment, and I think they put him, judge him from his own words, they gave him enough rope to hang himself.
Yeah.
And I think some of that has to devolve to the federal government. Why did they appoint this fellow? Just his lack of experience and his lack of acumen.
It's a rhetorical question.
And why didn't they intervene? Why did it take a credible charge of sexual assault to finally intervene? Right. What's the standard here?
Yeah, what's the standard?
Are you going to wait till Senator Duffy rapes someone before you say, hey, let's examine the wisdom of some of your statements and so on? Because it's a management issue, and that's how I always looked at it. If I had an employee who was besmirching the reputation of my company, I would probably intervene earlier rather than later.
Yeah, in contrast to how quickly he ditched Helena Gurgis, former MP.
That was a couple years ago now, yeah.
Just for stuff her husband had done.
Maybe they weren't quite so unimpressed with Brizeau as we're assuming, they being the conservative caucus.
Or maybe he had
they liked having somebody out there who was doing what he was doing.
Or maybe somebody with a bit of political capital they could exploit.
Yeah. Okay, let's go around the table here. The Senate, abolish, reform. Greg, recommendations?
Oh, no.
No, you don't have any thoughts about that?
No,
this is the topic now. This is what everybody's talking about. Do we just get rid of this thing? Or?
I'm probably the wrong guy to ask about
that. That's fine. Okay, so Greg is absenting.
So how about proportional representation in the Senate? Rather than appointments or elected.
Right.
Oh, really? So, I mean, that's perhaps something that's been called for a while now. There are some assumptions that people make, and one of them, which I find amusing, I have to say, is that if the Senate were elected, it would be a better Senate. But then I have to think there are a lot of people elected already in Canadian politics who are less than impressive.
Yeah.
My favorite example is Rob Andrews, who's been in the House of Commons, 18 years now, and he's useless. And there are others I could cite.
And how that's kind of a duplication of what the House of Commons is.
Exactly. We've already got an elected chamber.
It's kind of redundant.
Yeah.
I think it is needed to have regional representation in some form in legislatures or an upper house, but at the same time you also need to reform the elected House of Commons and add proportional representation to the mix. But PEI should not have like three MPs or whatever they have. You know, they're the size of a small town in freaking Ontario, and they've got all this power. You know.
They're taking over.
Well, let's just say their voices.
Speaking of PEI, Mike Duffy, what do you think about that? Since we're talking about embarrassing senators.
Former reporter for Canadian Tory Vision. What do you expect?
Well, everything you can say about Brizeau, you can say about Mike Duffy, although I suppose he's a less extreme example of it. But, you know, the partisanship and the colorful commentary,
sure.
Some questionable journalistic ethics in his background, right? But the residency thing was always for me a distraction because as Michael Kinsley once famously said, it's not what's illegal, it's the stuff that's perfectly legal that's the problem. And there's all sorts of things that go on in the Senate that don't break any rules at all, but they're appalling. And I alluded to that by noting that it took these sexual assault charges to get Patrick Rizzo in trouble. Up until that point, he hadn't really done anything to break any rules. And I'm thinking, well, maybe there should be some rules.
Yeah, besides being an obnoxious douchebag.
Maybe you should have some sort of to answer my own question about the Senate, I wouldn't abolish it because I think, I mean, theoretically, having a chamber which is non-political.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which isn't just...
Non-elected,
yeah. Which has the luxury of being able to do things long-term.
Yeah.
Because politicians have to think to the next election.
Right.
And long-term policy in the House of Commons is 6 months from now. Just do something that's going to get us reelected. So you have a chamber which, putting aside its historical, it's questionable, and I think quite bad historical political dimensions. You know, the upper chamber in Britain was how the House of Lords kept the people in check, is what I'm politely trying to say. Why be polite?
It's got this, let this democracy thing get out of hand.
Yeah, exactly. It's a check on democracy. But putting that aside, there is a role for it as a policy area. And there's some people there who I got to know who are doing really good work. So throwing it out just because of one person or five or 10 people, and probably more than that, is maybe ill-advised. But it would be nice, two things. It would be nice if there was a better process for evaluating, better criteria for appointing senators, maybe a more rigorous process. And I'm also bothered by this Twitter stuff too, as well. The communications aspect of it. I know people who work in government, and all of the Twitter, everything is subject to review.
Right.
And they complain about it, and they say it's ridiculous. You have to submit things 6 weeks in advance, and it's reviewed by half a dozen people, and it's controlled and everything. But why not? Why not with the Senate have something where you don't get these Patrick Brazeau
and scientists can't absurdity. Talk. Scientists can't are gagged, but this Patrick Brazeau can say whatever the...
Well, it sounds like I'm advocating form of censorship, and maybe I am, but I think at least there should be some kind of a check on some of these more or less self-disciplined people who seem to end up... Maybe if my first idea was taken seriously, then my second one wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah.
Be more careful about who you pick.
Right.
And that's my two cents on that one. So let's move on here.
Canadian politics.
I know.
Our ratings are tanking right now.
Starting out with the with the parochial stuff. Sounds from a North Korea video here. A creative new use of the song We Are the World. Did you guys see this video?
I saw a little bit of it.
So it's a North Korea propaganda video, as if there's any other kind.
Oh, it's a music video.
I'd love to go back in time when they're recording We Are the World and say, you know what? You're doing great work, guys. Someday North Korea is going to really explore the full potential of this. So it's a video. Starts out with a guy going to bed, right?
Yeah, it's a dream sequence.
A dream sequence. And he starts dreaming about being up in a spaceship, and he's flying over a reunited Korea, which of course is one of the huge propaganda points of North Korean media, all of which is government controlled. And then it flies over the United States and it shows American buildings burning. Presumably they've just vanquished the imperialists of America.
I heard they took that footage from Call of Duty or something.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's what I heard.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. From Kim Jong Il's massive video collection. He was a huge video movie buff.
Yeah,
huge
that's
movie
right,
buff.
Huge.
To the point where he kidnapped a South Korean director and brought him to Korea.
Yeah,
to
he
make
made
movies.
Movies. He spent a lot of his time making movies.
Yeah, just crazy stuff. What are some other highlights of this lovely piece of work? So they reunite Korea, vanquish the Americans, and then the video ends with the young man saying that someday this dream will surely come true. Despite all kinds of attempts by imperialists to isolate and crush us, never will anyone be able to stop the people marching toward a final victory. That's the overdubs or the
yeah.
whatever they call those, the words imposed on
the title.
Yeah.
Subtitles.
And I guess Korea's about to test some nuclear missiles there.
That's
so
right.
This is part of their... Why are we testing missiles? Because, oh, look at all this wonderful stuff here that we got planned. Car towed after workers turn legal parking spot into handicapped space. This was in Tel Aviv. So a woman parks her car, goes off and does her thing. She comes back, she has a ticket for being parked in an illegal handicapped parking spot. Only it wasn't an illegal parking, handicapped parking
right.
spot when she parked there.
Right.
So she hunts down some security footage showing city workers painting the markings around her car before towing it and slapping her with fines. She goes to court with the video footage and the city is forced to apologize. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Hila Ben-Baruch, who did some investigation, got the video footage, and went to court. The city called her a liar, or a city employee did, after telling her that she had to pay a $95 towing fee and a $271 ticket for parking in a handicapped space. She's been living there for a year and a half. She says, I know I could park there. So I saw it too in the video. It was
yeah,
great.
There's a metaphor in there.
Yeah, exactly. So be advised. Keep a video camera on hand whenever you can. Greg, we're going to play some music here and just transition the last bit of the show here. But let's talk about this here. Ice Age.
This band is, I think they might still be teenagers. And it's punk rock music. And it's like captures that long gone time for all of us. When
makes you feel young again.
Yeah, you know, you're
old.
Eight.
Well, we are.
Okay. Captures the passion and nihilism of 18.
Ah, nihilism.
Nihilism.
Whatever happened to...
Pressure!
pressure, pressure. Oh God, no pressure. Can't take this pressure.
The Roundtable, WayneKSpear.com.
Did you guys catch this?
No,
this is amazing. Well, amazing, I don't know. Is it amazing? There was a debate in the Canada House of Commons. Nobody came. Harper wasn't there. Nobody from the Conservative cabinet wasn't there. They were going to talk about Mali. What's the plan? Are we going to send troops or whatever? And this is just what's going on now. It's that the government kind of gradually gets involved in stuff that's going on around the world, but there's no plan.
Yeah,
there's no discussion.
Yeah,
and I laugh, but I don't know. I mean, it's sad. It's just
they really seem to take their cues from Washington on foreign policy. I think they tend to wait until the U.S. Has an opinion on something before they seem to want to get involved.
In most cases, that's true. Canada is very ambiguous about everything except Israel.
Yeah.
Very unambiguous about Israel. Yeah. Anything else is just who knows what their thinking is and what the plan is.
Remember how
it'll be in an omnibus bill. Read it.
Yeah, that's right.
How they're embarrassed into supplying some aid for Haiti.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't interested.
Floundering? Can I use that word? Is the government officially floundering now? Arkansas couple wins lottery twice in one weekend. Wow. How about that? So this couple goes on what are the chances? They go on a fishing trip. They buy a lottery ticket on the way home. They win $1 million. Then they buy another lottery ticket later on their trip, and they win $50,000. This is Stephen and Terry Weaver of Stuttgart, Arkansas. That's $1,050,000 in one day on two consecutive lottery tickets they purchased on a road trip.
Yeah.
Greg, how do we get that? What deity are they supplicating?
We just don't have the right combination of, like, from a weird place like Little Rock and fish, you know, doing a fishing trip, you know.
Dr. Seuss was the real Cat in the Hat. This was in USA Today. Dr. Seuss didn't have to go far to find inspiration for his famous Cat in the Hat. Apparently he had one and he just had to look in the mirror. Beloved children's author Theodore Geisel had an affinity for over-the-top headgear, reading from this, and he kept a personal collection of hundreds of outlandish hats that went on public display this week for the very first time. This goes back to about 1937, when his sister mentioned in an interview that the person we know as Dr. Seuss had a hat collection. This was something he was into,
yeah,
as we say nowadays. A peculiar hobby is what they would have called it back then.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the website here. I'll post some of these because this is actually kind of fun. The guy did have some crazy hats here. Military style hats, more imaginative hats.
Viking helmet.
A Viking helmet. And they're on display in the New York Public Library until February 12th, which is a couple days away. Does anybody want to mention this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed trial? All I had to say about this was, what's the deal with this censorship button?
Yeah, that's the part that caught my attention.
Yeah, I got lost halfway through this article.
The best part about that is they have this censorship button that the judge is supposed to press if there's things that he deems sensitive to national security.
Right.
But now it's been going off without anyone...
Who's pushing this button?
Yeah, they don't know who's pushing it now.
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, it's so fantastic. It's like a Joseph Heller subplot.
Wizard of Oz, with the Gong Show.
It's amazing.
Okay, so the Sheikh Mohammed, he was one of the masterminds.
Yeah.
This is the term they use for the 9/11 attacks, of course, September 11th. And now he's in court, and it's a Guantanamo court instead of a New York City civilian court. So now it's becoming this farce because it's being done under the auspices of the military tribunal, which is a something of which people have been highly critical for good reasons here. So it's being censored, and even the judge doesn't quite know who's in control of the censorship and why is it being censored and what are the reasons and the criteria.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So, oh dear. Hockey play-by-play was born in Toronto 90 years ago this week, according to the Toronto Star.
Before that, everyone just watched it silently.
Silently.
There wasn't much to do.
Mournfully.
90 years ago in Toronto. Yeah.
They didn't know when the scores happened.
No.
They didn't know what beer to drink. Hockey was just so depressing.
They had beer?
They had beer. Well, this goes back to 1923. The North Toronto Hockey Club played host to Midland in an Ontario Hockey Association Intermediate Division playoff game. There were only 3,000 people or so in attendance that night in the 8,000-seat Mutual Street Arena here in downtown Toronto, our lovely city at the center of the universe. And in that game, defenseman Lionel Conacher, who was already nationally famous as a multi-sport star, he'd be chosen as Canada's Athlete of the Half Century in 1950. Later on, that night he scored 6 goals in North Toronto's 16-4 victory. Yeah,
it's
those
high
scoring games.
Then.
It has
well,
been.
Well, you know, I think that is what that score reflects is prior to Rocket Richard's entry into the game, when you got a penalty and you were playing 5-on-4 or 3-on-5, whatever, however, you know, whatever the man advantage was,
right,
and you scored, that didn't end the penalty.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So you would have these incredible scores because these guys would get 2 minutes to just...
3-on-2
yeah,
or whatever.
Shoot away, right? Ding, got another one, all right.
So the announcer who described the play that evening, as I may have mentioned, was a fellow by the name of Norman Albert. And he, I guess, set the template, developed the play-by-play style, which is now with us and seems to have always been. Those were good memories.
Yeah, I remember fetching beers from my dad. Send us.
Back when it wasn't embarrassing to be a Leafs fan.
My hockey card collection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I was growing up, the ultimate hockey card was Bobby Orr. Everybody wanted to be Bobby Orr. And you'd flood your backyard in the winter, go out and play hockey.
For me, it was Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Japantown demands pants for Michelangelo's David. A replica of Michelangelo's, or Michelangelo's if you prefer, Renaissance sculpture David that was erected suddenly last summer is unnerving residents of a Japanese town, with some calling for the naked masterpiece to be given underpants. This is in Ukuzumo, a town in western Shimane Prefecture. This is a story here. So people there are offended because this statue was put up in a large public park that also includes a full-size running track, a baseball stadium, tennis courts, a mountain bike course, and a play area for children. So there's lots of kids around. The kids are seeing these naked sculptures from this weird Italian sculpturer.
So what kind of pants would they put on?
What kind of pants would they put on?
Tight hipster pants or like
jeans, blue jeans? Pants? Not the blue jeans, I hope.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, you can
business casual. Yeah.
Samurai, what are they?
You can get, kids can buy comic books there that has a, you know, a 1900 tentacled monster, you know, ravaging an entire school bus full of children sexually, but you can't. But they're crazy about the that's censored. That's like in all their movies and everything, even in pornographic films, they don't show full frontal nudity. Like they don't do it.
Pixelated, according to
pixelated this. Is the proper term.
That's right.
I have to point out these sculptures are very large, and so one of the complaints is that the children are intimidated by them. These gigantic displays of human genitals.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, who was the guy part of the Bush administration? Was it Lay?
No, that was John Ashcroft.
Yeah, and he wanted to cover up all. And you know what they did cover up was they have a copy of Guernica by Picasso about the horrors of the fascist the airstrikes on on that, or the airstrike on that. That was, I think, one of the first instances of an airstrike. That was like, and they were both Mussolini and Hitler were very impressed with the results. But they covered that up with a blue, because when they were giving press conferences about Iraq, it would be in the background when they invaded Iraq. So they covered it up with a blue curtain.
Say hello to your oldest mammal ancestor. Scientists believe they've identified the common ancestor that links human beings with all other placental mammals. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
It is amazing.
I don't know. It should be. It's a rat-sized creature that lived on insects. So when you trace us all back, it's just rats.
That's right.
University of Florida researchers analyzed the anatomy of living and fossil primates, including lemurs, monkeys, and humans, as well as their closest living relatives. So they think now that, contrary to the conventional theory, which is that these groups diversified wildly after the extinction of dinosaurs 65 million years ago, that in fact the evolutionary branch goes back to the time of the dinosaurs. I think it's pretty cool. 65 million years. Mark your calendar.
Uh-huh.
That's when it happened. This was interesting. They used a visual reconstruction made possible by a database, which is cloud-based. So now you can go into this. I read that and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool, because we all know about cloud storage now, right? You upload everything and make it publicly accessible. So you can be anywhere in the world working on a fossil or a database or something you found. You tap into this database and it's accessible now all over the world. Anybody can get into it. And wherever you are, you're no longer isolated. You're part of
this
global project.
Yeah.
I mean, cloud-based storage coming into this is kind of cool.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It is.
It's kind of in keeping with what the internet was originally based on, the idea of academia and government and people to share ideas, scientific ideas, research and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you don't even know. You're working on something. Some dude on the other side of the world's working on something. You'd never meet.
Yeah.
Maybe you speak different languages. You probably speak different languages. Yeah. And the two of you just, boom, you're working on this thing. And suddenly you got the other half of the puzzle that didn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
And now it's there and you can put it together. And
Now you know. You understand how we evolved from rat.
From a rat.
Rat that fed on insects all the way up to Patrick Brazeau. Yeah. The great chain of being.
You can see the line.
Anyways, another week behind us. Another week of crazy weather too.
Yeah.
Which we survived. One person was a victim of the storm, apparently. The blizzard of
Snowpocalypse.
The Snowpocalypse.
Yeah.
I'm glad it has a snappy name.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, with that, we bid you adieu. Be good. Be safe. My full leaf clover.
Does it feel like you?